Hello, this is Daryl War, and I have decided I'm going to keep going with the Margaret Chaussette Dupre podcast because the last one just made me feel really, really good just going through everything and talking about it all. I am definitely burning the midnight oil with creating more of the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. It's not like I'm not working on it, but I figure I got some extra time, and who doesn't these days? We're going to continue on with Margaret Chaussette Dupre, chapters 6 through 10. Yes, there are things that perhaps some listeners' virgin ears would not like. If that is the case, you may turn it off. Although the last one was so clean, I don't even think I said the word sex. I just was really elated. And I'll just go through 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, and it will get darker. But it is something that I think is so amazing. Otherwise, why would I be doing it? One thing I definitely wanted to point out, if anybody wants more of the story, because I am working on more of it. Yes, there's the angry author's note. I have a temper. I think a lot of you know that by now. And I would rather pay attention to things that didn't set that off. So I have kindly been trying to ask people to not do whatever they do that makes me angry. However, I wanted to point out that if you want me to start sharing more and replace Love in the Half Moon, that chapter, I would suggest going to the chapter Free to Be You and Me and just saying what you liked about it. If I get enough chat about that, then I will replace Love in the Half Moon. So that is your pointer. I don't have any high hopes about that just because I know we letter writers, we have the understanding for that. And people who are just wasting a lot of time online just don't have it. So that is the suggestion. And I am going to continue onward with Chapter 6, A Broken Bed. Sometimes I want to change the title of this chapter just because it is kind of a giveaway. But at the same time, that might be enticing to be like, why is it named that? And then have people kind of going through going, oh. And it was a stand-alone vignette at one point. So I don't even remember what it used to be, but it now is connected to Chapter 5 when they were out on the bench near the cliffs and they got to rush home. So there's more to it. And I remember somebody who was really impressed with the first draft of this whole thing said, hey, it's all about build-up. So I'm like, okay, I'll work on that. And they're just rushing because they got that hunger and that urge again. It's nice when I look back at this, it's like, okay, there was a little bit of scenery because I used to get really upset working with Barnabas. Like, can't we do something that's less focused on your bride and more focused on the story? Like, what's going on outside of that? Working with that, especially when this was just coming at me so quickly. I couldn't get the guy to stop talking about her, and I still can't. He is just absolutely in love with this woman, which, hey. So, at some point, she teases him. She stops. She realizes that, wouldn't it be funny to just stop on the way home and just drop everything and make love right on the ground? And he's like, no, I know you're teasing me. I know you're teasing me. Because he knows her humor and that kind of thing. Before they start going back, they're kissing. And that's making things worse in a good way, if you know what I mean. Yeah, and he's watching her. Sometimes they're holding hands as they go and sometimes not, but he's just watching her and he's watching the dress move and he's just getting more and more elated. Oh, and here is one thing. When I talk about having a hard time working with Barnabas, just because for me, you know, adopted character, you take him as is what you see. So he can be very overpowering in what he particularly wants. And there was this time in this chapter where I was like, oh, do you really want to say that? I mean, that's like, I felt like he was going too far. He said, we stood in our natures to know this of each other and to know in the most biblical sense of the word. I was like, oh my gosh. And yeah, he just kind of forced that out of me. So they get to the room. And that's what's really what makes so much of this work is that in the show itself, he's always keeping that room so sacred, that bedroom. And when you think, gosh, what could be happening in there? There is a bed. And that it was kept so well, but it was kept so well for a long time. And that's when I realized, yeah, that bed's not going to make it. They've been waiting so long. It'll make a couple nights, maybe, but I think, actually, this is the second night. So the first night it made it, but this night it's not going to make it. Hence the title of the chapter, A Broken Bed. It gets very, very heated and a lot of touching, a lot of description of touching. They're removing each other's clothing in kind of a hurried fashion, and she thinks that she hears something at the door. So she's crouching down to kind of see through the keyhole, and he grabs her from behind, kind of pull her and like throw her on the bed practically. But that actually came from this idea that I had for the actual radio drama where Hecubus was peeking in the keyhole. So Millimeter was going to like slap him for that. But that's where that came from, that there was like that rattling. It was just this idea that I had years ago that it was Hecubus. So if you know the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, that will make sense to you. And I guess they're not completely removed of clothing entirely, because I think that he's describing that when they're on the bed, they're still kind of pulling stuff off and it's getting a little awkward just because they're laying down, reaching for each other and finally joining. So funny to be doing this and not be able to really just read it straight, but it's very vivid in how he feels and what the movements are. And then he eventually starts noticing, I must wonder why I so seldom had these pieces of furniture replaced after over a century, for at this point our rollicking ecstasy broke the frame of her sacred bed. And they didn't stop to look. They just kept going. So what I see, what I remember putting together here, it was basically that middle part that just dropped whatever holds the mattress up, and it just sort of drops. I don't know, it's like stereo instructions I'm reading. But yeah, she makes a joke about that. Oh, perhaps even if there are new things applied here, Barnabas, we'll just as soon break them. And that is the deal there. They're just vigorous, is one of another word. It's in this chapter too. He's trying to keep himself upright, and she does this thing where she kind of raises her legs higher and higher, and it just overwhelms him how he feels, you know, because they are together. And just that switch, and he just gets just overwhelmed, like, wow, I have been with at least one other woman, but it was not like this. And then the crazy thing is that she gets her legs so high, he's asked the opportunity to kiss her ankle. Yeah, so they wipe out again. And the bed's collapsed, and they're in it, and they're just like, huh, you know, let's just lay here. Which kind of makes me wonder, even though that is the next chapter after this one, it makes me wonder kind of like, well, what did the crew taking care of the old house, or did, you know, if they heard that, or if they were just... Oh, well, actually, yeah, earlier in the chapter, there is a moment when they're reaching the house where Wadsworth is sort of using a push broom outside the front. So we know that he's outside and he's staying outside, and he sort of gives Barnabas a grin before they rush into the house. He's very aware this is going to go on for quite a while during my continued employment at the Collinwood Estate. Yeah, they just wipe out, kind of get the blankets covering them, and just, oh, it's getting a little cold. And one of the things he says that's really touching, they were touching, tender, released of all wants and charges, but still feeling an immeasurable bliss with each other, finally having what we'd strive so long to achieve in an act, to be married, to be wed, to be in love, a heaven, a haven, an entitlement we wished on all our loved ones, should they be so wise enough to welcome its blessing. And they fall asleep. Hadn't been out much that day, but they do kind of just... I'm sure they'll wake up later. And let's look at the reviews for Chapter 6. Yes, an old friend I miss. This, my dear, was definitely worth the wait, and the bed breaking just makes it all the more enjoyable, knowing that it barely distracted them from one another. I loved it. It's back in April of 2014. Oh, I forgot. This is one of my absolute favorites. I saw something like this on Forever Mine, and I was waiting for this. Somebody wrote, oh, Josette, you lucky devil. Do you even know how many of the women, and even a significant minority of men, would love to have Barnabas as you have had him? And I knew that. Or not me, but of course. It was just getting into the passion, into how things are going. Yeah, she even said, "It makes my heart sing to see these two finally together and happy. Long may it continue." And courtly passion, vampires to spend all eternity together, and the subtle humor of a broken bed. And also, Elena, she picked up because I was, again, trying to get people to stop being shy. Because I knew with Forever Mine, some people don't get that shy. So I had put something from a song, Madonna song, Human Nature, and is express yourself, don't repress yourself. I'm kind of saying it over and over. And Helena caught up on that, and she said, "I shall freely express myself, my dear." So she didn't need too much encouragement, but she was down with how I was doing it. And that was erotic. So she's wondering about the possibility of Bramwell or somebody on that order. I suppose with them being keepers of their families, Collins, Evans, slash Dupreys, that it wouldn't be such a big deal. And the bed breaketh, ha ha. When Barnabas had Josette's room remodeled, he should have had Willie to upgrade the bed, stronger frame support. And Myrrh, also amazingly written. I almost felt as if I were some kind of deviant voyeur gazing excitedly through a peephole waiting for the show to commence. And Wadsworth was absolutely magnificent. Now I know who the character is based on. I can just imagine him sweeping the porch waiting for the newlyweds to come home with an aha look in his eye. I believe this is Melissa. Yet another splendid chapter. How glorious that Maggie and Barnabas can't rush back to the old house quickly enough to make love. They not only love one another deeply, they can't keep their hands off of each other. Marveling at certain things, you know, she really is quite expressive. Erotically descriptive love scenes with dialogue embroidered opulently, but particularly with Barnabas's inner monologues about his physical sensations, emotions, and state of mind. This is no easy feat by any stretch of the imagination, but you weave the action with the inner lives of your characters in such a way that is elegant, sophisticated, and powerfully moving all at the same time. Of course, it is very funny when their passionate lovemaking literally breaks the bed. It makes one wonder if the bed fracture symbolizes another step in their complex mutual healing process, question mark. Have they turned a corner with the collapse? We must continue reading to find out. And then, oh, wow, okay, in 2017, so from Melissa starting in 2015, the continuation with Lizzie, who was also the one who said that the wedding night put the DS movie's lovemaking scene to shame. Oh, this is good. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Oh, and I'm not going to pronounce this well because I do not have the practice yet. Melissa was helping me with that. Mon démon, which is my demon in French, even though I'm not saying it correctly. But that was pointed out from a few people. And I don't know where it came from, in all honesty. She just started calling him that. But I know what it means. I know what Maggie slash shows that means by it. She means, yes, you became a demon, but damn it, you're my demon. That's what monomon means. That's why she says it and calls Barnabas that, her nickname for him. So, and I don't know how many people have been able to tell that, so it's just as well that I'm telling you now. That's where it comes from. Or at least that's what it means. So it just kind of came out of thin air. Josette just gave it to me. So, just overall observation, despite Ben Stokes urging Barnabas to let Josette's spirit rest in peace, the vampire summoned his dead bride. Against her will, Josette's spirit was forced, whereas Kitty and Maggie were reborn spirits who chose to come back of their own accord. Vampire Maggie is the personification of this freedom of choice Josette was never given. It's intriguing to see all three of the ladies coexisting as one person, even though they were all the same person to begin with. It's confusing and yet not. Yeah, I agree. Very much so. It will be interesting to see how Barnabas and Maggie's relationship progresses beyond the so-called honeymoon stage, broken beds and all. I'm not sure who this is, but someone wrote in June of 2017, "This is the full expression of what the show was only able to hint at. So glad to have found such a wonderful Barnabas Josette Maggie story. She is his one love, and that is my opinion, and I'm sticking to it." I wonder if that was Lisa. She's helped a lot, and she's helped me a lot with this because Lisa really, when I contacted her in 2014, I saw all the Barnabas Maggie stuff that she had, and I was like, "Hey, can I chat with you? Because I'm really confused at this Barnabas Julia thing." And she was immediately like, "Yeah, they were friends," and I didn't know the length that Lisa had been watching Dark Shadows for like decades and in all these different formats as far as PBS, VHS, sci-fi, DVD, blah, 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 blah. And she really knew. So I don't know if this was Lisa. It's possible. But at the same time, it's good to mention her because I haven't talked to her in a while. But I'm working on reading her stuff and giving her my feedback for what she's put together. I mean, she started it years ago. And it's very enjoyable. I know, Lisa's just the one who, she was definitely the go-to. Because I said, you know, I don't understand this non-canon pairing thing just taking over. It doesn't make any sense. And she's like, oh, it doesn't make any sense. And I'm worried that it's getting worse. And I said, well, I'll keep going in that case. Because, and she had no idea that I had this novel on the back burner or ready to represent it to restart it. She had no idea. So when she saw, oh, it's the reincarnation and it's all three of them, I mean, she was just blown away. Because as in her interview, she tried to do the reincarnation, and every time she tried, she was unhappy with what she got. So she worked on a more Barnabas, Maggie, on the grounds that maybe the reincarnation isn't there, but there's this thing where, yeah, she was saying about shows that you can't shake her. So with me coming in so much later and having all this other stuff that I studied, she was just floored. Wow. Like, just the wedding day. And then she was like, when's the next chapter? And I'm like, oh. And worked out how to put it together to be able to share it around. Yeah. Oh, okay. So then another pal who I'm actually writing letters back and forth. I can see how the bed broke. I love the way the story flows. Just as if this were real life. Ah, oh, can be exhausting to be in love like this. Just as the story shows, so worth it. More and more. She will end up in the family way if this keeps up. And eventually, yeah. But it had to be some really, really particular variables to get that put together, and also the child that would make the most sense with the situation. And Auntie, last April, I like how you describe the way things move in this chapter, the desire stirring and the sea breeze. I remember watching little zephyrs ruffle here and there in long grass when I was little, and it seemed like each one had its own agenda to go with its size, speed, and direction. And that ruffling, swirling skirt, Barnabas seems a bit like a child mesmerized by a ribbon dancing on the breeze. And yells. Kind of what it was like, drawn to follow it wherever it goes. His clothes must be well made. Nowadays, buttons fly everywhere if an undressing process is the least bit feverish. The way you use the word fling is evocative. Now, whenever I think of the phrase having a fling, I'll think about clothes on bodies and bedclothes being flung in every direction. Now you've got me wondering about how to design breakaway beds and other furniture like the tearaway trousers male strippers wear. They could be like the benches of carnival dunking booths. If you hit some part of the structure a certain way, it collapses, but it's easy to set back up for another go. And also the line where, depressed within the cage of its physique, she says, I don't know about that, though. The way they're carrying on, they can't be too depressed. So it was kind of like the double meaning she was going for. And the candles flicker out as they settle down afterward. One more spontaneous motion in the environment that mirrors the lover's mood. Yeah, that was good. Chapter 6 is pretty extreme. But I knew that, you know, you've been waiting that long. You've been keeping that room sacred for a couple centuries, pretty much. I mean, give or take 30 years. Yeah, that's not going to make it. But they are going to rebuild it. And a ton of reviews for this one, too. But it is an earlier one, like I say. And then we are going to move along to Chapter 7. Which is other reactions. And I've mentioned Auntie's take on that before, where most love stories are experienced from the lover's point of view. Whether or not the lovers keep it in mind, the rest of the world is still out there noticing their hijinks and attendant noises. And she goes into describing a different situation. She says, I always wondered why so many Japanese shunga, the Edo period's answer to French postcards, although the French might not have asked the question yet, include a voyeur watching the action, often a servant. Perhaps it was to remind the users of the artwork that in a crowded city, where many of the interior walls were paper, someone probably would be watching or listening to them, voluntarily or not. This chapter is about those someones. So this is Wadsworth in first person. And as we had seen in the previous chapter, he understands what's going on with his employer and his lovely bride. And he'd seen through it the whole time. Even episode one of The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, where you're just seeing right through everything. That's why we have that extra scene, too, that I put in there with episode one, where he's in Josette's bedroom saying, oh, well, you know, your waitress is back at her place of employment. And Barnabas is like, I'm talking about the girl in the portrait, the lady in the portrait. And Watson says, yes, sir, so am I. He just sees right through it, you know. I'm just like, wait a second. But this is where Wadsworth is coming from. He and Willie, they're still working the old house, and they start to hear these noises. And they're like, At first, Wadsworth thinking, well, you know, maybe it's more belated relatives come to haunt the premises, you know, more ghosts or something. And then him and Willie are like, you know, and sort of listening up to say, well, you know. And he says, Mr. Loomis, do you recall how to play backgammon? And Willie is pretty much, I don't know and I don't care, just show me how and I'll get the gist of it soon enough. And then Wadsworth says, so one can imagine that he's become quite proficient at the game of backgammon. What with all the new ruckus going on lately. So the day in question that they are going out the door once more, and Dr. Hoffman's out there. And it just sort of builds through the whole thing of, we're going to go over here, would you like to join us? And she was like, well, I want to talk to the couple, you know. And Wadsworth stands in the way, blocking the door, like making sure that Julie's not going to go in there. And she's getting suspicious, like, what are you two hiding her from me? And Willie makes a joke, we're hiding out from something else. And eventually Dr. Hoffman gets wind of the noise and it's like, oh, again, again. She's sort of rolling her eyes all. They just can't stop. And when are they going to leave each other alone? And then she also mentions Professor Stokes. She's like, well, you know, I thought it was a little crazy the way Elliot got his hands on me sometimes, but they're just nuts. There's a little touching on the experimentalness of, so maybe it's the thing with Josette is that she's just got such an appetite for this. And Dr. Hoffman suggests that maybe part of it is, may not be just because Maggie's young, it's her previous life as a man getting mixed up with her feminine desire and taking a skyrocket through exploration. Well, it was one of the things that Dr. Hoffman was saying, and that was touching on the Hansel Bachmeyer incarnation that I made up. And near the end, Willie's asking, want to leave a note? And she said, what, another one? No, and I doubt I could send a letter. I don't believe the postman comes by anymore after hearing that racket. So Willie tries to still convince her, well, do you want to join in for a game of backgammon? Which only two people can play, by the way. And then she straightens up. She says, you know, how about we go into town and I buy you gentlemen a beer or two? Then you can buy me something in kind. Sound like a plan? Most agreeable, madam. And Willie says, sure, I'm game. So it's just the fun of the outsiders just seeing everything. And Helena was like, yeah, that was funny. And also for Chapter 7, before Oisin knew about the M-rated version, she caught a version of Chapter 7 in 2014 from the 200 years away. And I definitely want to include it. What she said in February of 2014, that she was happy to be reading it because prior to that, she had thought maybe it was a songfic thing with 200 years away. But this is definitely the same chapter. Fun interactions, she says, between Willie, Julia, and the added butler. Willie and Julia definitely sound like themselves, though knowing the condition of the furniture in the old house, I wonder if David really bought the line about jumping on the furniture. He'd probably know that the furniture wouldn't stand up to that kind of treatment. I love the line about prescribing a sedative. Touché, considering Julia's usual modus operandi. And I'm very glad that she's going to take the guys out for a beer. Just tickled me. And Murr, she actually said, I didn't get what they were up to until halfway through the chapter. God, can't wait for the next one. I am kind of reading these vignettes at random, but we'll go back and read them again properly. Oh, and Melissa, gosh, on 2015. This chapter was a nice breather from the intensity of the previous six. Willie and Julia playing board games and making rhyme remarks about their friends' vigorous lovemaking, at least the idea of them playing board games. But somebody new came in last October and is not the biggest Dr. Hoffman fan in the world. She said, ah, the ever-nosy, know-it-all Dr. Hoffman. As proficient and knowledgeable as she is in medicine, she's still just as clueless as ever when it comes to knowing when to mind her own damn business and how she needs to see and understand things from other people's perspective, whether or not she agrees with them. Just getting into the kind of the soap opera gnashing of teeth type of reaction. I'm just like, oh, she's so nosy. But that was what made the chapter funny, when she's like, what's going on? And then she realizes, and she's like, oh, you know, here we go again, that they're making all that noise. But I also really appreciated Chapter 7 coming out, just to show Dr. Hoffman is also not out of the equation as far as being a friend. and still being involved. You know, we don't dismiss all these people just for this one romance. That it's right neighborly to be concerned and come over for a chat, and everybody's just sort of living happily ever after, and we're exploring that. It's great to get the commentary, just to really understand where people are coming from. And also, this was fascinating just because I knew at some point the streaming with Amazon Prime, which really has, I mean, there were a lot of people coming in like, where's the fan fiction for this? So I don't know how fast they were watching it, but there was a lot of watching of it, and I'm sure that's still going on. And so that presents like, well, what do I want to look for? And this lady was definitely, I'm not going for the non-canon. I'm going for the other potentials or even some of the original characters with Barnabas. And so that was fine. Just people kind of wafting through going, well, what is there? And that was what I wanted to see for years. Just, well, I'm interested. And what's there? And that's what's lovely. Now, of course, the next chapter is going to get dark and it's going to keep getting darker. But the main reason that chapter 8 is dark is just everyone involved in this having to face the problem of a non-canon pairing taking over things. I remember this definitely was written on that one day in 2013. Chapter 8 is titled The Whom of Many. And I was just letting Barnabas get smug about the whole thing.
The Julia Barnabas pairing.
He's focusing also on Kitty. It was the one part of the story that he feels the worst for her incarnation, just because she kind of comes and she's overwhelmed and she goes along with it. And then there's sort of the wafting backwards in time through the portrait that they both do. And the next thing they know is that it's almost a complete repeat of Josette's death. Done in a different way, of course, just because then eventually you have the Leviathans showing up. But yeah, he's just focusing like, oh, you know, still I'm so in love. And it really is the chapter itself. The story is focusing on Kitty. And when Barnabas can tell that Kitty is resonating within Maggie, that there are certain things that are kind of different and coming from late Victorian era as well. And that also comes in the novel generally. I remember Melissa asking me, what style of Barnabas, what does he look like? And I figured for the sake of the loss of Kitty, which will happen in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows pretty much the same, because then that leads the Doctor, meeting the Doctor from Doctor Who, to come in and explain, hey, there's that third incarnation and we're sticking with that. And that's one of the reasons that this had to happen, so that you could remember to come back. And also, it's one of the reasons that we're hoping that the Doctor is going to get it right, as opposed to certain accidents that he tends to have. But it makes sense that we've got all these variables going on with time travel. Time Lord is going to help fix that. But with Kitty and Chapter 8, he is rather going through the sadness of her loss, but also the gratitude that she's still there. It wasn't all in vain, because Maggie is there and she's been both women. But he does go on for a spell with the poor Julia thing, as some might say, he explains it. It was pretty much like me asking him, well, what do you think about this? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. You weren't in love with Dr. Hoffman. And so he just getting smug about it, but also everybody's got a sweetheart, pretty much. I mean, minus Wadsworth, who's remaining faithful to his late wife's memory, and Sam Evans as well. I don't know about Roger, don't ask. I was actually reading Lisa's work, and there was a breakfast conversation where Roger was getting uptight, and somebody was like, she gotta maybe get him a sweetheart or something. Maybe that's why he's feeling left out. And I was telling Lisa, oh, good luck. I can't find him a date. I can't find Roger a date. But anyway, that is going in the wrong direction. But I was expressing, I mean, people were more focused on the author's notes. And I really felt that these things have to be addressed, because it's been difficult. And when you guys have seen me get very angry online, or you've heard me in podcasts get angry, part of that is coming from the frustration of having to deal with all of this bizarre rhetoric that doesn't add up to any version of Dark Shadows. And I felt that when we went to go see the film on the opening weekend, there was that one little piece with Dr. Hoffman, and I think that's just joking around. In fact, I did see a message somewhere. I did see somebody from years ago when the movie first came out, and she was like, it's about time, with that little segment of the 2012 film, and was just tickled by it, because she liked Dr. Hoffman too, but she also just felt like, well, there's a little something there for me, and And I was really touched by that, the casual way that it was just a fun thing. It's just fiction, no big deal. But yeah, when I've had to deal with this, Helena was the first person to kind of join me, and we became friends. When I was getting to know her, right off the bat, she's all I usually go for, the pairing of Dr. Hoffman and Barnabas Collins as a romance. And I understood that. Back in 2013, when we started talking to each other, it was no big deal. There's a lot of other non-canon pairings that get pretty popular. Kirk and Spock's one of them. I have even seen Hawkeye and Trapper romances, and a lot of the people who are in the mash pile enjoy those. It is not a big deal. Some people will get offended. They just leave. Turn it off. It's been difficult, but when I could finally find the people, like Lisa and Taryn, and then even Melissa, who is a much newer fan than I am, I've had to listen, and other people too. I'm not sure how long the list could be when I think over everybody I've encountered, but the upset was just increasing for years, even decades, I would wager. Because at some point, there's an understanding, this didn't happen on the show. Yes, Sam Hall wrote this thing, but it didn't fit in with what we see on the program. And it's just this sweet idea, and then it just ran wild for a while, and then kept running wild. And it led to people trying to convince each other that it was canon and that Barnabas and Maggie was just absolutely wrong and there's no reincarnation and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, you look over, yeah, they switch around some of the characters or even the character's name. 91 Revival, it's Victoria, but the romance is still this reincarnation with Chosette and Barnabas. And with the 2004 unaired pilot, again, Victoria's showing up. There is a connection between her and Josette. It's there. Then with the 2012 film, which I felt they handled very well, they blended Maggie and Victoria together to sort of unite everything that had come before. So you hear her say, my name is Maggie Evans, realize, oh, I don't want to be recognized for my old name, so I'll come up with something else. And I thought it was very clever to kind of have her be reminded of what she came up with previously by the winter sports poster in Victoria, BC. So, but yeah. I've had to listen to a lot of venting, and I'm sure there's a lot of venting that continues to go on. But that was what this chapter was delving into.
The Julia Barnabas pairing.
I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. Why is it always, absolutely, this is the way it has to be? And I thought of three different ways that Julia wouldn't be in love with Barnabas, and easily placed for fan fiction. Alternate universe, Julia simply isn't in love with him. Or two, she cures him, and as her mission is accomplished, she collects her data and goes in search of other vampires to cure. Or three, which would be my personal favorite, she simply gets fed up that he's not in love with her and goes off to enjoy the affections of a man who does, you know. And that's been another concern of mine when it comes to this issue, is that not only is it rough for the people who don't like it to always have to hear about it, to always be argued with about, well, this is the way you have to think about it, and encouraging just insecure behavior. And then that builds, and the people who are for the canon pairing, it's like you can enjoy Dark Shadows as long as you repeat the rhetoric for the non-canon pairing, which is Julia Barnabas, as long as you're part of this weird cult thing. And it's a pustule, and a pustule was growing and growing and growing and growing and growing over all those years. So it's not just me getting upset for no reason. It's me getting upset, like, what is the problem?
It's me listening to others who've been upset for years about being told what to think opposite to what they see.
You know, this is a supernatural show. Reincarnation, not a big deal. It's very obvious to the point that that's why, you know, in The Pit, episode 7, there were jokes about it, where Maggie's getting mixed up and Milligan's kind of like, oh, okay. And so, yeah, and again, I wasn't involved in any kind of groups or anything like that. Lisa was, you know, she would collect the fanzines over the years. And she was seeing this stuff, and she thought, where did they get this? And it just started to build. And then she's getting surrounded by it, and she doesn't believe in that. So I listened to a lot of venting from Lisa over the subject, and from other people. And that's why it's like, hey, I want to focus on the positive. I got you on alternative. You're the people I'm looking for. But coupled with the social media issues, where you're just surrounded by a lot of negativity anyway.
So yes, the fans of Barnabas and Maggie, whom I love and adore, they end up driving me crazy with all the venting about these people that they don't like and that they're complaining about. Yeah, I try to say, hey, I have this great show you'd like, and I know you do, you left off at this episode. Can we focus on the positive and tell me what you enjoy about it? But no, they have been filled with so much anger at the people advertising the non-canon pairings, and also the unsentimental haters of Barnabas and Josette for so many years that's been going on, that's what I would be listening to instead of discussion about the show or about the novel. So anybody saying focus on the positive, I've been trying, but because of the infiltration of so much non-canon rhetoric that the fans of the canon pairing couldn't stomach, I was hearing almost nothing but the negative about it so much of the time in these years. So if you're wondering why I've gone insane on certain websites, that's why. It is a buildup of the Julia Barnabas factions and the haters of the characters going through the reading eyes of Barnabas and Maggie fans. And then after all of that, guess who is seeing nothing but that venting and complaining? Daryl. Me. That's who.
And on top of that, you know, these people, a lot of these people going for the Julia Barnabas thing, it does not make them happy at all. They're still angry at him. Even reviews and Julia Barnabas stories, they're still angry at him. It's like nobody's, some people do get pleasure. Like Helena, she's like, this is what I like. And that's fine. And then there was a lady who wrote on my weblog, I believe her name is Cassie. And she's like, yeah, it's what I like. And if somebody doesn't care for it, I'm not going to get all hurt about it. Very healthy attitude over the whole thing. And so I was just saying, you know, if it's not making you happy, why do it? I mean, I've even told Oshin over the phone, you know, she agreed because I was talking about the Barnabas thing. I'm like, watch another show for Christ's sake. Really? So, yeah. And then there was somebody who did go by the name Never Without You. She had suggested, yeah, there probably should be more than one Barnabas, just one for each chick. Like maybe there should be Barnaby. And I was elated with that. But also the author's notes, Helena came in first, of course, that as a Julia Barnabas fan, I truly respect your hopes and dreams for Barnabas/Maggie and Josette Kitty. But I love the idea of the Julia Elliot pairing, as you already know, and I already read from The Pit. She's kind of embracing that because she really is a good Dr. Hoffman fan. It's like, oh, well, there is an alternative. Okay, and that's fine. She even said years ago, bring sexy back with Stokes. And that was the other thing that I noticed, too. You know, it was like very anti-Stokes and Hoffman. And I was like, oh, now we're getting into something that's really insidious, really creepy and sinister. Scary to see stuff like the Professor Stokes is too ugly. Where all of a sudden it's as though, oh, we're open to all these different views, but you can't enjoy Dr. Hoffman being romantically paired up with Professor Stokes. No. You're not allowed. Okay. Sure, I see. We're open to different viewpoints, aren't we? Just, you know, that you ostracize people for being interested when the guy was interested. And so, just seething with all that. And people trying to be kind of nice about it, like Cynthia Curran. There's room for different views. And it's like, well, yeah. But the bottom line is, you go through so many different incarnations of Dark Shadows. However you slice it, this is the woman he loves. It's a reincarnation of Josette Dupré, and the original, too. It just depends on getting the definition correct, which was not happening when I first started finding the people who were interested in this. Or my original friend who helped get this started and encouraged me in that kind of thing. It never occurred to her either, Julia Barnabas. You know, she watched on her own, too. Just buying the DVDs one by one over the years. She was like, you know, I'm happy with The Pit as far as Barnabas being with somebody that he cares about, but you're telling me about this Julia Barnabas stuff, and I feel bad for Julia Hoffman when you're talking about that. Just why? And I get a lot of opinions over the years. Not so much now, just because people aren't even that conversational anymore as far as, I mean, they just all go to the social media and just kind of rot there. But one thing, when I brought it up with Tingler years ago, in 2015, and I told Melissa and Lisa about this, and they're like, oh, I couldn't have expressed it better. Tingler was telling me, I could easily tell you why I think Josette is the only woman that Barnabas could be happy with. If one looks first at, even though he kidnapped Maggie, he tried to imprint Josette onto her, what attracted him to her that her core would be able to absorb the new persona. He saw one that would help a stranger. This is a rare trait. Sure, we might help others if it really didn't put us out much. A true heartfelt help is likened to a paramedic who helps with little regard for their own safety. That was Josette, Maggie, and Vicky in a nutshell. Next is her standby family. Again, all three share this and willingness to forgive. These traits we never saw in anyone else in the show. Julia had some, but she is driven more by her need to be the champion who controls a situation, which both Maggie nor Josette need to do. They don't have to champion a situation. So this by itself precludes Julia from winning his undying love. Will he help her, care about her, and have her back? Yes, but that's where it stops. And then he also added, even Vicky did not have the core that Maggie or Josette have. So I see no other one that he can love. Then, as we find they are the same person, we see we are justified in this. And I remember telling Lisa and Elizabeth, like, wow, I wish I could have said it that well. And then somebody much more recently said, hey, I'm right there with you on the Julia Barnabas shipping that seems to be so prevalent in fanfic today. No, no, no. I have no desire to see those two in a romantic relationship under any circumstance. And even in the process of suspension of disbelief that's necessary in fiction, I couldn't take it. If there would have been even the slightest hint on the TV show that Barnabas ever had any romantic inclinations toward Julia, well, then maybe. But even then, I probably still wouldn't like it. So she was in it, seeing all this stuff going, you know. But like I said, sort of passed by and gave some thoughts. And that was October of last year. Then Auntie came in more in summertime last year. And she really said this very, very well. Because I think she wasn't even aware either. Like, huh? You know, when I started telling her all kinds of stuff, she's like, oh, you know. Because she was on her own, too. Watching the series and enjoyed the movie, too. And so when she saw my notes, she said, I suspect a few of the more insistent Julia fans might be as much a product of the 1960s as Julia herself and her contemporaries on Dark Shadows. The women's movement at the time looks in retrospect like a very bumpy road where the critical left turn at Albuquerque could be easy to miss. When I was running home from school to watch Dark Shadows in the heart of what would later become the Rust Belt, we had a neighbor across the block where the mom was an MD psychiatrist. You'd have thought she had two heads the way people reacted to her. I think I might have seen her in a couple of fancy pants suits because somewhere in my notes I'm like, why is it no woman on this show wears a pair of pants? Which I have seen once, but that was Carolyn. But it'd be a couple of years before women were allowed to wear pants to our church. So, continuing with Auntie's review. It would be decades, though, before men openly got the hots for girl geeks a la The Big Bang Theory. So, another show. And she says, I remember reading a short story in American Girl magazine back then about a girl whose life's tragedy was that she was 6 feet tall, an inch taller than the tallest boy in her school. So no one could take her to the dance. This was before the rise of the supermodel Twiggy. One of the first international celebrity model actresses was only 5'7". Today, nobody looks twice at a shorter man walking beside, dancing with, or marrying a taller woman. But it was a real BFD back in the day. Like height, intelligence in a woman put most men off in the 60s. Not James Bond, I guess, but no force on earth could put him off. If you wanted a man, you hid your smarts. If you wanted a career, you hid your attractiveness. Trying to maintain two separate personalities based on location or time of day was too, well, tall in order for most normal people. Julia Hoffman chose to let her geek flag fly and look for a man who could appreciate the real her. And certainly a man who'd been around for 200 years might have learned to look past the transitory allures of youth. The trouble was, neither Julia nor Barnabas were exactly the healthiest puppies in the pound. From garden variety lies to indirect manipulations to gaslighting duels to murder attempts, well, after all that toxic sludge under the bridge, any kind of healthy relationship between these two would have been a miracle. A miracle does make for a good read, but so can the way people cope in the miracle's absence. The fact that Julia was one of the strongest, unabashedly smart female characters on TV at the time tempted one to overlook or forgive her scheming and backstabbing. When she fell for Barnabas and he just kept chasing vulnerable young creatures who might smell good with Jasmine, it became the story of every smart, strong woman's unrequited love for a man who should have been able to appreciate her, but wasn't. Having him finally return her love is one way for her to win. Having her get over his shallow ass, ah, Barnabas, you know I love you too, and find a better balanced match is another way for her to win. And she put a dot 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 after better balanced match because I think it was like, well, it could be Professor Stokes or it could be somebody else. And I've even suggested, well, what about Dr. Woodard? And Lisa said, well, I think if he's married. And I'm like, well, I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm like, oh. And plus, I have heard that there are romances with her original character, but it always goes back to Barnabas in the fan work where it's like, oh, and he realizes at the end or something. And I'm like, oh, you know, like, I don't know. But the Professor Stokes harshness, I mean, I was hearing people say, oh, he's too ugly. And I'm like, oh, really? What are we, 5 years old? And it was scary. It really is scary to see stuff like that, where suddenly it's just like, no. So as I went through that, talking to friends about it, going through my auntie's thoughts on the situation, that I was very pleased, and I wrote her to tell her so, and then I talked to her that night. If it wasn't that night, it was one or two nights later. Yeah, and I was like, oh, you couldn't have expressed the problem any better than that. And it kind of scares me, too, because it seems like there's this women's lib thing, and I've said that if you want to think I'm a gay man because it makes you feel better, go ahead, but I am a woman. Daryl War is a woman, okay? So, seeing this, I'm just like, what on earth? And also, just, why are we celebrating her weakest trait, an unrequited romance? Why are we expounding on that? If she's a strong woman, she could do without the guy. Easily. Again, I was born later, so I don't want to get all caught up in this kind of stuff. But it reminds me of a musician I heard once say, and so Women Against Women's Liberation was born. I was saying, okay, there's always this talk about Dr. Hoffman being a strong woman. Well, if she is indeed such a strong woman, this dude who doesn't dig you is the guy you dump. And you know that, being a strong woman. You don't keep on pushing it. But I haven't been in existence as long as whatever facet is clung to for Dr. Hoffman being so iconic. And I adored the review for pointing that out to me. But I was saying that the phenomenon unfortunately degrades further. It becomes this ideal where there is no other romantic partner for Barnabas, and damn him for not knowing it, and all the weight of it is dropped on Barnabas, including people who admire the canon romance with Barnabas, which is, in effect, telling someone who to love, which we know is very wrong. We got all this other liberation going on. I mean, what happened? Does it just not apply, for some reason, to Barnabas Collins? I understand freedom of expression, but when you're bothering other fans to believe something that didn't even happen on the screen, then, yeah, we got a problem. Yeah, I had to face that head on. And that to tell someone who to love, you know, it's wrong, and it's, if not at least in poor taste, then we've got the Professor Stokes being too ugly for Julia, and that's yet another grade school defense mechanism. And frankly, we don't need that kind of thing in women's liberation. At least we don't in the 21st century, as far as I'm concerned. So that is just the sadness, and that is one of the reasons that there's been, I mean, like I said, the social media has been a major problem. Like, messing with people. And the like button, doubly so, because that's bleeding out to other systems. And it's just a total hazard. But I've got the confirmation from long-term fans, this has been a problem for a very long time. And, yeah, it is a pustule that just grew and grew and grew. And eventually it's going to explode and make a huge mess everywhere. And that's what's been happening. I mean, Helena is one of my dearest friends now. And like I said, the other people who are into this, they don't go bugging people. And then that's why I loved Kathryn Lee Scott's interview from a few years ago. She was asked, I mean, the idea of it being a canon pairing when it's not a canon pairing got so prevalent that the person interviewing her, who was on the actual program, is saying, was Dr. Hoffman and Barnabas the great love story? And she's like, no. And he was surprised that she responded so quickly. And she said, the main romance of Dark Shadows was the Barnabas-Josette-Angelique love triangle. Then they just kind of moved on to other subjects. It just was a very friendly discussion, but I bless her heart for saying it. And bless her heart for saying it so casually. There you have it. And I know people say, oh, well, Roxanne. See, that's the other thing. Roxanne, I know that they brought in another love interest because Kathryn Lee Scott was going to France. But it doesn't go there when they make a recreation of Dark Shadows. It doesn't just start with Roxanne and Barnabas all of a sudden. But yeah, I feel like that is even more proof that, yeah, he wasn't interested in Dr. Hoffman. I mean, they got a redhead. And then they bring in another one. So, because she's got the gentler, gregarious nature that he liked in other girls. And, well, there you go. But Roxanne is kind of interesting just because that was usually the thing that everyone could agree on. And so whoever was for Roxanne Barnabas would always be. I mean, I remember one person on social media was like, now everybody's going to hate me because I admitted it. It's like, no, I want to talk to you. And I couldn't keep in touch with the person because I knew, you know, it's got to be so much worse for Barnabas Roxanne fans. Although I think for some of them, they're just kind of like off in space and it doesn't really matter. They aren't even affected. They're not noticing anything wrong, which I would say more power to them. I just hope that, you know where you're going when you take a step outside. Don't be too aloof. But if you can ignore the negative like that over Barnabas Roxanne, you know, more power to you. Wish I could have, like I said, when I started, me and Helena was like, no problem. Okay. That's a pairing that makes sense in fan fiction. But not the extent that it became this huge problem. And there was a time that Helena was like, well, you know, this, that, and the other. And then she finds out, oh my gosh, Daryl's getting so much heat. and it's fiction. What am I? And she just stopped. She didn't bother me about it anymore. She's like, yeah, we got real problems. And she even found a story that she showed me on a dominantly Julia Barnabas romance fan fiction website that was actually not a romance of Julia Barnabas. It was him on his deathbed basically saying that in another parallel time, he had married Maggie and they lived a wonderful marriage till the end of her days. So even there, you know, there was something there. And I think part of that is just because some of the fans of Julia Barnabas, they're not in it for the romance. They're in it for the friendship. And personally, I am too. But going through that, I think what bothers me the most is raising the kids on this stuff. Because they need training. You know, a lot of young people and new fans. When it comes to trying to get kids to believe something that's on the screen that isn't there. And then getting feisty, you know, monkey see, monkey do. They'll do the same thing, get feisty. I mean, that's not good for the kids, and it's definitely not good for the fandom. It's not good for the kids, much less the fandom. Kids should be the more important thing, just understanding the difference. Sure, you can like it, but it didn't happen in the show. But on a more upbeat note, when it comes to these troubles, some of us have a lot of that time in our youth where things are so hard and they're so difficult. And me too, you know, very extreme troubles. And I was one of very likely many, many people asking, why me? Why do I have to go through all this? And then you reach this point in your life and you get your answer. I had to go through all that to understand what to see through and to have a nonsense detector for these things. So on we move to chapter 9. With chapter 9, not a lot of reviews, but it was a short chapter, really. It is where they're getting a lot more vampiric. In fact, somebody, when it was still about maybe 15, 20 chapters, she had told me it was her favorite, chapter 9, which is all of us. And I keep wanting to change that, but it was also delving into, yeah, one woman, two women, three women, how many of us are in this room, in this bed. But also very vampiric, getting very on the more animal side of themselves. Even Barnabas, he's just, I've got to taste her blood. He gets overwhelmed with that kind of hunger. But also, it was good because with this second draft, because it was just vignettes, there's a bit more here because I knew that the darkness was going to come. That Maggie was going to have to face that she was married to her kidnapper and is and loves him, as all three of these women. It made sense for the end of chapter 9 to have Barnabas sort of focusing on that. She mentions that in more of a playful way that she'll be needing to punish him to get some of her own back. And something that he says about that, after all of this, any pain your past needs to provide will be a luxury. Exonerate me, Josette. Purify my soul. So that would lead to where it's going to go in further chapters down the road. But also, I put in some notes of trying to remind any readers what happened with the Kitty Soames encounter. That was 1897 and then 1796. I said 1795 just because I thought they were getting it wrong. And I was like, oh, no, it is. Josette showed up in 1795, but it was like the end of the year. So as things continue, 1796. So I'm getting that wrong as far as these notes are. But yeah, that I was just thinking that it was brief enough. I mean, as far as what I had witnessed when I got the box set and I was like, I got to track down Kitty. I got to figure out what the deal is with her so that I know what I'm getting into as far as this romance is going. And yeah, maybe it lasted a lot longer just because it's 5 days a week, whereas I'm just zooming through DVDs. But I was imagining in my mind that it was so brief that maybe there was this 1960s housewife coming home from a tropical vacation only to discover the gorgeous 1897 on Dark Shadow suddenly lambasted with these bizarre Leviathan weirdos. Picture her rushing out in her curlers, hairpins trailing behind, to ask Selma next door, what the heck is going on? And I say, of course, the teenagers likely knew. But because this particular chapter was so intense, chapter 9, and very vampiric, that it helped to know that Kitty kept remembering being Josette to the point where she strangled Angelique with a vengeful relapse of judgment, then lost all knowledge again and was embarrassed and shocked. And in this way, I can see Josette being the kind who could attack. So these bedroom vignettes might not be so implausible. Kitty was about to leave to keep from being pulled back into Josette's identity. Somehow she was lured to the old house and Barnabas knew. Still, Kitty would go from saying yes to no, and then finally when Barnabas flat out proposed, she desperately accepted. And then, of course, because it's soap opera, Barnabas is like, oh, I have to go do this other thing first. It just irritated me, but it is a soap opera. But that doesn't stop me from yelling at the screen, you should have tied her to your back with a rope and taken her everywhere with you. So Kitty paces in Josette's room, likely biting her fingernails down to the cuticle in anxiety of waiting, suddenly has Josette's wedding dress on, morphs into the portrait, which later Barnabas joins her, and then suddenly they're back in 1796 but separated. It's episode 884 and episode 886. And later on, so much teamwork ruined by those pesky leviathans. And as you likely suspect this already, I think I could safely give away the plan that, well, I have another doctor lined up for them. So with that, it's pretty brief chit-chat where Murr was saying, well, you've done it again, my friend, regaling the reader with the most intimate of details captured within a 200-year-old love affair. Have you ever thought of publishing said works? Well, yeah, you know, and likely something that is more in a zine fashion, just because I would prefer... We're seeing that light coming towards your eyes, not so good for you. Keeps you awake and all that. Having it on paper, I think, would be good for a lot of people. Some way, somehow. And Helena said, I know the doctor you're speaking of. Bub's the word. And this was erotic, although I was having nauseous moments with the blood, and a pleasure to read. You know, it would be interesting to know of Laura and Roger's fiery relationship, because that's something that Barnabas touches briefly on. Just because I was trying to include everybody, but I didn't know enough about Laura. And I just thought, well, you know, there's always these jokes about fire and fiery and all that. And, you know, maybe that's what Laura's charm was as far as a wife. And you definitely see that if you read one of Oisin's works about Gerard Stiles having an affair with Laura. I was like, whoa. I was like kind of blown away. Because in that story, Gerard's terrified, but he goes along with her. But Helena's saying about chapter 9 here that with 3 or 4 of them in bed, it was a Caldwin orgy, although 2 of them were dormant, or were they? Because it's labeled all of us. I get the feeling that maybe some people thought it was an orgy. So that's what Helena is responding to. And then Auntie, she said, I really felt the vigorous, joyous abandon of this scene. I like the part about hooking her fingers into his scalp and the chain reaction of nerve impulses it set off. Looks like the furniture survived this one, though. Sometimes I wonder what it would be like to use breakaway furniture like they used in stage sets for barroom brawls, etc. You could break the furniture every night and put it back together in the morning. And that's good, just because talking about chapter 8 took such a long time. So that one being very brief is quite a good thing. Oh, and also not a whole lot for chapter 10 either, although that is where it starts to get dark, the story itself. Chapter 10 is prior disturbances come to haunt. Again, Barnabas is in first person, and he is coming to the understanding that the problem with Maggie remembering the kidnapping and have to sort it out and thinking over it, that when he came out of the coffin, I had come to this time a broken madman and isolated by one thought. Josette was mine and had been taken from me, and through it all she loved me as passionately as I loved her, if not more so. So yeah, there's definitely things to fix. It says 1795, should be 1796. But just going through the 1790s time period where he says she was letting me create her into the cursed being I'd become, not knowing what that entailed, but demanding she didn't care. I guess that is what I saw on the show. And that, oh, actually, this was a thing that had bothered Taryn. And when she read this, she was sated because she said that one of the worst things that happened when Josette did die is Barnabas telling Ben she died hating me. And he really believed it. So what could be good in this case, it made a lot of sense, you know, me just saying, well, what does Maggie think about that being Josette and having all those memories? That Maggie put me straight on this when I mentioned it to her once. She almost snapped. I did not. I died in fear and confusion and with plenty of reason to do so. But I've always loved you and I always will. Well, my mind, he says, was at rest on that point now. And that, I was thinking about, yeah, it's kind of like an isolation tank. And that I had experienced that on a field trip. But everybody's in the room, you know, it's like a whole class, pretty much, or just a portion of the class, you know, kind of separated just to see what it was like. And like, yeah, if you had like one point of light, you'd be fixated on that, just doing anything you can, just like playing with that. So for Barnabas, I saw it easily as Josette was that one point of light that he is just focused on that whole time he's in there. So the chapter itself gets to where Dr. Hoffman comes over, let in by Wadsworth, and Dr. Hoffman knows that there's something wrong. That she says, as much as it pleases me to finally come here and have a moment with friends without so much noise. But she's aware during a time that when she was talking to Maggie, that Maggie suddenly dropped her cup on the saucer like she was in another world, because it just keeps on coming back in her memory, and she's trying to figure out how to process and handle that. And Dr. Hoffman sees that. Barnabas points out, yeah, she's remembering this other world where, you know, bad things happened, and that, yeah, you know, you were involved in covering that up as well. And Julia starts to raise her fist kind of in protest and then just drops it because she knows, well, yeah, I was involved in covering that up. So when she, you know, kind of starts to admit it and like, oh, if only blah, blah, blah. And Barnabas just says, what's past is past, doctor. Now we have to deal with what's to come. And that Maggie needs to punish me. And Julia's like, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. How's that going to solve anything? It would set her free. She could physically know I was bound to her, that I'd do anything, be anything, go through anything. He says, I knew what I was doing, and yet I had no idea what was going on within myself or within her. He's pointing out, doesn't your doctorate tell you that there is a need to let it out for her? Let Maggie do something. And of course, Julie's arguing, well, yes, but I'm not sure violence on you is the answer, is it? And Artemis says, it is, I believe. Maggie needs to act it out, and I need to suffer it. And, oh, yeah, I like this a lot because it's focusing again on Dr. Hoffman being a psychologist. That she says, okay, your mind's made up, basically. I'll wonder at how I helped you by coming all the way over here. And he says to her, by listening, Dr. Julia Hoffman, if you remember, that was half of your purpose in getting your degree, wasn't it? And so, it's a kind of a good luck thing. And so, yeah, so I say, yes, there is trouble in paradise, and there always is. It's going to be a long haul. Let me know if you want to post it quicker. I'll do what I can. And boy, yeah, I was getting sick to my stomach putting that thing together. Not every last portion of it, you know, the healing chapters, but it was definitely going down the dark road, which you'd be like, oh, we're going to have a real bummer podcast next time. This is only a marginally bummer, I think, or at least just one portion. So with Murr, it was just, you leave the reader thirsting for more, so to speak. And Helena saying, you know, I like this chapter. And Julia, happy face. Congrats to her and Elliot. Because I had put something in there. Did Professor Stokes propose? Because I wasn't sure when this would be happening. Is it during and after? Or is it just after The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows? So I figured that a proposal should have come earlier. But I just want to make sure that that romance is still in there. That it's understood. And Helena notes, while I do share her concern, I do agree that Maggie needs to deliver some payback for her ordeal in captivity, which I mentioned before in your previous uploads. Looking forward to what happens next. And Auntie came in and she said, I love the part about a soul in darkness, instinctively striving for one tiny light, even with no clues as to what it might be. Barnabas seemed to think it will hurt to get there. Maybe it even has to hurt to get there. If it's the light of the outside world through a minute crack in the wall of the solitary cell, he'll have to fit himself through that crack somehow. I've forgotten if dissolving into a mist was one of his particular vampire powers, but that'd be almost cheating, wouldn't it? Or tear apart the rest of the wall with his bare hands. So, yeah, there was that, I think, a little bit, at least in 1897. That was teleportation. And then she says, I can't wait to see how she responds. Will she do something she doesn't want to in order to help him shed his burden? Or in her new shape, informed by all her incarnations, will it be something she wants to? So, yeah, I don't know if she got any farther than that. I can't remember. I don't think so. But there's still enough for chapter 11. So yeah, it was going to go down the dark road. And I remember at some point I put in an author's note because somebody had said, oh, it's not a fairy tale or something. And I'm like, well, no. And then I realized, no, we're thinking of fairy tale in that sweet way. But this could definitely be one of the darker fairy tales, if you know what I mean. Because, yeah, when you study up on the light, happy movies of just a general good guy, bad guy type of thing going on, or damsel in distress, that kind of thing. The original old tales, they got pretty dark and extreme. So it could be. Could be a fairy tale marriage. So, yeah, I think that's about it. Hopefully, we'll still be enjoying this. And I'm working hard, you know. I'm doing discussion for other people's fiction. At least it's one of them. So just, yeah, just trying to figure out how to live my life again. I mean, I still get very, very outraged when I see something really, really dumb online. And that's just an action. When somebody's doing an action and I explode. Because it's not about me being right. It's about me seeing people getting hurt by some of this technology. and they're going along with it, and it bothers me. And I try to be as calm as I can, but there are times where it's like, you know, you just built me up to pop. And I've related repeatedly what I'm looking for. And also, if you've listened to the whole run of all these podcasts, you know that I was going through a lot of hard times in previous years because of what was going on. And then I found my way out, and it is doing well for me, and I want it to continue to do well. But the experience doesn't fade away. It's just that I focus on the letters and the writing and all that stuff. Just having that one-to-one contact with people, which I deeply enjoy. If you're one of my pen friends, thank you so much. I mean, I needed a lot of help, and I continue to... We need each other. It is, like I said, it's all symbiotic and very important, and working through stuff with each other and seeing if we can find a way for a few of us to learn how to have the correspondence again. Because, I mean, like I said, about the fandom politics, the kids getting raised on that, new fans of Dark Shadows, and that is... a big problem. But then we've also got this other stuff we're raising them on, where we're not raising them at all. We're just letting them run wild. You know, you think you're sheltering the kids, but it's very harmful, some of this stuff. And I'm not even talking about pornography at all. You know, that's bad enough, but then the behavior, the social behavior, I mean, it really, they're being encouraged to be either complete fools or nasty and vicious. That is a problem. But to try and end this on an upbeat note, it's good to go through this. You know, I'm going to keep on going in between the other work that I'm doing, because going through it and listening to it has really made me feel a lot better. And so I guess also in this way, for me, some of this burden that's coming up for Maggie, I can kind of have that therapeutic same sense of having to let out the troubles. And don't we all let these things out? And that, like I also said earlier, with the Barnabas Maggie fans, or just the Barnabas Josette fans, they look for the friendship, and then they find a big wall of non-canon pairing, and you're not allowed to like that, even though that's... I mean, my husband said it. He's like, I understand if there is a book series or a television series or a movie or something where there is a romance off to the side in there that you're not particularly fond of. Then he said, but what I don't get is that if you hate the main romance, what are you doing engaging in this material? It's like, what are you doing? He's like, it does make sense. It's the main romance. And if you don't like it, maybe it's just a story that is not for you. And I think that was one of the wonderful things over the years that Helena's repeated to me, that if Barnabas and Josette would have been done right. She's a fan of both of the pairings, the non-canon and the canon. And that helps. It was wonderful to have her be the first friend that I made through all this. And that seems providential, too. So, yeah. Get in touch, or stay in touch if we are in touch now. Look forward to talking to y'all again. Take care.
Absolutely no regrets.